His glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Dear listeners, good morning, greetings and loving Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. A warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live, and this is a segment, Morning Glory. As Sister Karuna is away for today, myself, Raghu from Team Radio Sai, will be hosting today's segment of Morning Glory. At the very outset, dear listeners, let us all offer our most humble, prayerful and grateful pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. The voice and listener, the heart and soul of Radio Sai Global Harmony. The time right now in our studio is 9:40 a.m. and today is 2nd of August 2018. And the climate and weather in the Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram is very pleasant and cool. In fact, from past couple of weeks, it's been this almost same. Generally, during the day, it will be cloudy and occasional sunshine. It's a mixture of sun and cloud, with rare drizzles here and there. Right now, the Vedam and Bhajan session concluded in Sai Kulanth Hall, and most of you would have listened to them through the live audio stream. And as I am speaking to you right now, Swami's devotees have lined up in Sai Kulanth Hall to offer their pranams to Swami. All right, dear listeners, after the busy month of July, now we have entered the month of August. Last month was indeed very busy with a lot of events in Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram. Thousands of devotees, Swami's devotees have come to the ashram, and there are many programs starting from the Golden Jubilee of Swami's Educational Institute, the Anandapur campus. Anandapur campus happened to be the first Swami's Educational Institute which completed 50 years. So around 1,500 alumni of Anandapur campus had come to Prashanthi Nilayam to celebrate this occasion. And then there was this Ashadi festival, and there were international conference, the Go Green conference, and in the month end there was this festival of Guru Purnima. Also in between there were Parthi Yatras from the North Indian state of Punjab, and there was another Parthi Yatra from South Indian state of Tamil Nadu. And there was also Parthi Yatra from United States. So many devotees, Swami's devotees from all over the world had come to Prashanthi Nilayam, and there were a lot of celebrations, lot of many events, many programs in Sai Kulanth Hall, and all these programs were webcast live in Radio Sai's YouTube channel. And dear listeners, if you have missed watching these live programs, even now you can go to Radio Sai's YouTube channel and have a look at them at your leisure. Alright, before we head on to the segment Morning Glory, I have got an important announcement to make, dear listeners. This weekend, that is on 4th and 5th of August, Saturday and Sunday, Radio Sai's Telugu stream is celebrating its 7th anniversary. Yes, with Swami's divine blessings, Radio Sai Telugu stream started on July of the year 2011, and this year it completes 7 years. So as part of the 7th anniversary, Radio Sai Telugu stream is going to have live programs for 2 days, that is on 4th and 5th, that is coming Saturday and Sunday. So on Saturday, the live program will be by the children from the states of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. So the children will have live program from morning 6 a.m. to evening 4:30. This live program will be on the theme ABC of life. Avoid bad company, always be cheerful, always be careful. So they'll have a lot of programs like live audio dramas, skits, discussions, quiz program, Antakshari program, and much more. And on 5th, the live program will be by elders, will be by the Sai fraternity, by alumni of Swami's Educational Institute, and by Sai Youth. So all of them will come together and have live programs like audio dramas, interviews, panel discussions, concerts, group songs, quiz, and many more. This will be from morning 6 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. and it will be on the topic Unity, Purity and Divinity. So dear listeners, coming Saturday and Sunday, that is 4th and 5th, live programs from morning to evening. So stay tuned, Radio Sai Telugu Stream. So this will be as part of the 7th anniversary of Radio Sai Telugu Stream. Alright dear listeners, now let's start the Morning Glory segment. And today I've got for you two interviews for this segment. One is Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, an episode of the radio series Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, and another is an episode of the radio series Tryst with Divinity. So the first interview will be with Dr. Shashank Shah, an alumnus of Bhagwan's University, and the second interview will be with Dr. Ashok Srinivasan. And in conversation with them will be Radio Sai Bishop Prishti. So dear listeners, have a listen, please. Stay tuned and Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. Today is February 25th, 2017. The beautiful and uplifting Shivaratri Akhanda Bhajan concluded this morning in Prashanthi Nilayam, and the Sai Kulwant Hall was full and overflowing with devotion, overflowing with sacred vibrations, overflowing with the glory of His name on thousands of lips. Shivaratri has always been a potent festival, and there are thousands who never want to miss a Shivaratri with Swami. And in this beautiful concourse of devotees in Prashanthi Nilayam today, also I found so many former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions, and I was so happy to see Brother Shashank Shah, an illustrious student of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, who is today a visiting scholar in Harvard Business School. And it's really Bhagwan's blessing, it is a divine design that he's here in India for a little while, and he's here now in Prashanthi Nilayam. And before we start this conversation with him, just a little bit background about Shashank and his association with Bhagwan and his university. Shashank today is an author and researcher in the field of stakeholder management strategy and corporate responsibility. He completed his doctoral research in Bhagwan's University in 2010. So he joined for his master's in business administration in 2002, which he completed in 2004. The next 4 years he spent doing his MPhil, and the 4 years after that were dedicated to his PhD. And the amount of work that he did for his postdoctoral research work, as well as the work that he did for his PhD, was so well received in the world outside that he received the AIIMS International Outstanding Doctoral Management Student Award in 2010. This came to him from the Indian Institute of Management, Ahmedabad. He's also the alumnus of HR College in Mumbai, and the college gave him the Golden Alumnus Award in 2011. He received this from the Sharif of Mumbai, again for his research achievements. And as I mentioned to you, he was a very distinguished student in his MBA and his PhD and his MPhil days. So he received his MBA and MPhil gold medal directly from Bhagwan's hands. The amount of work that he put in for his research is so vast that he continued to publish a lot of papers, over 100 papers, case studies and articles in national and international journals in the areas of stakeholder management, corporate responsibility, corporate governance, business ethics, integral education and humanized healthcare. He also individually and jointly authored 5 books and 2 monographs in these areas. and these have been published by very eminent publishers including Harvard Business School, Penguin, Random House, Springer, Sage, Emerald, Macmillan, all very, very established names in the business of publishing quality work. He has presented research papers at conferences at Harvard University in INSEAD, France, and he's been invited to institutions in Italy, Brazil, Turkey, Malaysia, Japan, India, of course. So as I told you, he is not only a visiting scholar in Harvard Business School, but he's also a visiting scholar at the Center for CSR in Copenhagen Business School in Denmark, also a research faculty at CSR at Executive Development Programs by Harvard University, World Bank and the Government of India, and the School of Management in IIT Bombay. He has also edited over 20 books and addressed hundreds of gatherings on the theme of Indian ethos and values, something which he resonates with very deeply. And in fact, his whole work, if you see, has this as the underlying theme. Even the corporate social responsibility work, the business strategy work, they have the underlining message of Bhagwan, which is so much in line with Indian ethos and values. He currently serves as the editor-in-chief, Harvard University Postdoctoral Editors Association. He's a fellow at the European SPES Institute, Belgium, in the International Advisory and Editorial Board member of the Journal of Value-Based Leadership, USA. He's a reviewer of Journal of Management, Religion and Spirituality and Journal of Human Values for Sage Publications. He's also a joint appointment. He has a joint appointment as project director and fellow at the Harvard University South Asia Institute. And recently he published his book Win-Win Corporations, which was very, very widely acclaimed. And in fact, he was interviewed in the Rajya Sabha TV, where he shared his thoughts about the current economic scenario in India. And coming back to his days in the college, of course, he has had a lot of opportunities to speak in the Divine Physical Presence, excellent orator, and he participated in a lot of dramas, a lot of extracurricular activities, and we know the students who have this opportunity to participate in these activities by Bhagwan's grace also get this opportunity to interact with Bhagwan at various levels. So he's someone who has had innumerable interactions with Bhagwan from 2002 to 2010. So it was an year where Bhagwan spent a lot of time with the students in terms of giving them a lot of opportunity to do a variety of programs. We had, especially in the years 2004, 2006, 2008, you had years where Bhagwan wanted to see a program almost every other day. So it was a year, that golden period in the association of Bhagwan and students, when Swami spent so much of his time seeing the programs by the students, and Sashank, given his talents bestowed by Bhagwan, was always someone who was very active in this area. Of course, he was also looking after the publication department in the hostel, and of course various other responsibilities in the hostel as well as in the university. So he's someone who's spent a lot of time living in the integral system of education that Bhagwan started this university with. And this is something, he's someone who's been a product of it, someone who believes in it, and someone who now in his own way is trying to communicate this message to the world outside. So with gratitude to Bhagwan that he blesses him with more opportunities to share his message, and gratitude to him again for enabling this conversation, I welcome you, brother, to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories.
Thank you, Bishu. It's a delight to be back in the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam. This is a homecoming, and that's what is a special part of Prashanthi Nilayam, that wherever you may go and whenever you come back, you still feel that you've been here yesterday.
Yes. And every time, I think, whenever you're in Prashanthi Nilayam, somehow everything that you are outside just drops off, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. You become the quintessential Sai student that you've always been, and all other identities and responsibilities, yes, go in the background.
Yeah, something as you step into Sai Kulwant Hall, it's always a very, very, yes, different experience. And I think that universality of divinity, how the divinity means the same for everyone. You get that feeling in Sai Kulwant Hall,
yes.
Isn't it?
In fact, yesterday night during Akhand Bhajan, when few of us were sitting in the Sai Kulwant Hall, of course, each one of us now is out, have completed our work in the university. Someone is a faculty here, someone is doing some work in India, I'm abroad. But when we were all sitting together and doing bhajans, the thought that passed my mind is that we are still a part of the hostel,
yes.
And we'll finish bhajans and go back to hostel to our duties of taking care of students and being a part of the system. So those thoughts are so much ingrained, and that's the core of our personality, wherever we may be. So that's what Swami has linked us to so strongly.
Wonderful. So I think let's talk about, you know, this training that Bhagwan has given us. And you are someone who was also very blessed to be born in a family who came to Bhagwan way back in the 60s.
Yes.
So you perhaps grew up in a family that always adored Bhagwan as the Navatar, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. So my great-grandmother came to Swami in 1965. So I'm a fourth generation of devotees. And yes, I can say that I have been born in a family, especially from my maternal side, that was devotee, that were devotees to Swami since almost a silver jubilee since I was, before I was born. So yes.
Yes. So how was it growing up in a Sai family? So did faith come very, very naturally to you?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I never had two doubts about my relation with Swami and his divinity, because I was always, he was the guru and the God that we looked up to. And that's how I grew up, looking at Swami's picture, that he is divine and that he is the master. So there were never two thoughts. But the only difference was that what came implicitly and then what came experientially was a very different journey. So till the mind is not active, till the intellect doesn't play its role, it comes implicitly. But then when the mind starts becoming active with maturity and the intellect starts playing its games, that's when the experiential journey begins. And that's when I went through the entire cycle and came back to where I was about my experience with Swami and my identity with him.
I think it's always one thing to look at Bhagwan's photograph in your home and, you know, worship him as a god. But I think it's a completely different experience when you actually come and see him.
Yes.
And altogether, a whole new experience when you become a student and you get to interact with him.
Definitely. I think becoming a student and being a part of the system, interacting with him, interacting with the various elements of the system is a very, very different experience, which devotees would be able to appreciate only when they hear many of us and our experiences. Because being a devotee, coming to Prashantaliam, serving in the organization is a very different experience from being a student, being a teacher, being a research scholar, and being part of the ashram and the institute ecosystem. So I fully agree with you that experience gives you a very different understanding of Swami and grooms you in a very different light. And I think that's why everybody feels that Sai students are different. But it's that grooming, that association, and that in-depth involvement with the system that molds you in a very different way as compared to visiting Prashantaliam often and then being connected with the Samiti. I mean, these are very different facets of our affiliation with Swami.
You begin to discover him, isn't it?
Yes, of course.
I think everyone has their own connection with Swami. But I think the way you discover it,
yes,
when you are a student,
yes,
when you are actually really living with him, when,
yes,
you had Bhagwan in his physical form. And of course, it happens even now. In fact, that's a different story. It happens even now in a very, very amazing way.
Yes.
But I think the greatest blessing that any student had living with the physical avatar is perhaps their spiritual growth. What would have probably taken us, you know, 10 janmas, he can just do it in 10 minutes.
Yes. It's a fast forward of your spiritual journey. And I think that was the biggest focus of Swami when we were here. So it was a capsule program in spiritual advancement. While we did our MSc's and MBA's and MTechs and BCom's and schooling, his agenda was very simple and used to always compare the carrot and stick approach.
Yeah.
So he's dangling the carrot of the worldly degrees before you. But then the whole objective is to use the stick of spiritual discipline and groom you and mold you so that the degree can be put to real great use when you move out. It's not just the content and the ability, but the nobility which goes along with that. So you can use the knowledge for universal welfare.
Yeah. So Shashank, so did you have this intense desire to become a student?
Yeah, sure. That's a very interesting story. So I'll start in 2001 when I was doing my BCom in the University of Mumbai. And I had this intense desire to be a part of Swami's University for the MBA program. But the problem was that the entrance exams at Prashanthi Nilayam and the final exams of the Bombay University used to overlap. Mm-hmm. They were both held in the month of May. So what it would mean was that I would have to wait for a year after finishing BCom so that I can be a part of the university. And that was looking a little difficult at that point in time. So I was praying to Swami, as we all do in such situations where things are beyond us, mm-hmm. that Swami should do something about it. And I'd written a letter in September 2001 and sent it with one of the Balvikas teachers, Shrimati Kamakshi Ramachandran. She was from Mumbai, Dharmakshetra. So she and her husband had come here. So her husband was sitting with that letter, Mr. Ramachandran, in the darshan lines. And in that letter I had written to Swami, Swami, I have a deep desire to be a part of the institute and I want to be here, but the exams are overlapping. Imagine writing all these technical details to Swami. But only you can do something, so that's my prayer to you. And he accepted the letter promptly with a smile. And then 2 months later, the unimaginable happened. For the first time in the history of Mumbai University, the exams got advanced. So the exams which were held in May every year got advanced to the end of March.
You hear stories of, you know, things getting postponed.
Yes, yes. So this was unprecedented. And I had an opportunity to share this in Swami's presence after I joined, the same experience.
Wow.
And Professor Nanjundia remembers it even till date. He always says, tell them, because he's from the examination section.
Yes.
And he knows what it means. So the exams got advanced and the exams got over in Mumbai in April and I could prepare for the exams and come here to Prashanthi Nilayam to write the exam on the 9th of May, 2002. I still remember that day. I had entered the Prashanthi Nilayam campus. I used to always look at it from outside because you're not allowed inside unless you're a student. So it was like a dream come true. I came for the entrance exams and I wrote the entrance exams. I got shortlisted. Then I did the group discussion interviews and I left. And then a couple of days later, after I finished everything, there was a telegram from Prashanthi Nilayam that you have been selected for the MBA program. And incidentally, my name was on the top of the list. Wow. I don't know why, by number, I don't know by virtue of what. But I got a call from the ad block. I remember Mr. Vijay Sarathy even remembering now that I had called you when I had spoken to you. So, I mean, that joy of communicating to every student that he is a part of the university reflected, resonated in their voices over so many decades. So I really appreciate that they were happy for us that we are a part of the system now. So yes, so that was on, that was around the 11th of May. And then on the 13th of May, I came to Vrindavan because we were told to report for the summer course. And on hindsight, I feel it was a brilliant opportunity because that was the last summer course in Swami's physical presence in 2002. And the experience of the summer course was a real fortnight-long experience of what it is to be a part of the system, what the system has to offer, what the larger objectives of the university are, and what is the connection between Indian culture, spirituality, ethos and values in Swami's vision, and how the university plays a role in actually facilitating it. So you know what happens during summer course, and we can keep that for another day. But yes, I remember that day, and it was the first day, the Prathama Vaishakha month, as per the Indian Almanac, when I entered the Vrindavan campus. I still remember that visual of me carrying a bag and a backpack and entering the Vrindavan hostel, looking at Satrai Vrindavan saying, Swami, I have arrived finally. And it's a very fulfilling moment when I look back. So yeah, so that's how my journey to Prashanthi Nilayam began. But there's a flashback to that and I would like to share that so that there is a context.
Yes.
So as you rightly mentioned, my great-grandmother visited Prashanthi Nilayam, or rather came into Swami's fold way back in 1965. And then in 75, Swami had visited my maternal great-grandmother's home at Santa Cruz in Mumbai. She was bedridden. She was suffering from cancer. So Swami had come to give her darshan. And there's a very sweet experience that she asked Swami. Swami asked her, what do you want? So she didn't say, please cure me or anything. So that really inspires me that she was a really grounded devotee. She said, Swami, this is my karma. I know I have to go through it, but please bless me that I don't suffer the pain which comes with cancer. And then Swami blessed her. Yes, you will not suffer any pain. And then Swami said, what do you want? So he said, Swami, I want your Pad Namaskar. So she couldn't get up. So Swami was sitting on a chair next to her bed. My great-grandfather was there and a couple of other family members. So Swami lifted his 2 feet and put them on the cot so that my great-grandmother could touch his feet and take her Pad Namaskar. So that was in 1975. And in April 1980, my grandparents, my maternal grandparents and my mother got an interview in Vrindavan. That was around Ravnami time. So in that interview, my grandfather asked Swami that, Swami, my daughter is married and we are praying that she gets an offspring or a child, whatever term we want to use. And she doesn't have any child as of now. So Swami said, no, don't say like that. She has a son. He will be born next year. So you come with your son next year for blessings. So he materialized Vibhuti and gave my mother. So my mother was keeping it for my father, thinking that she will share it with him. It's obvious. So Swami said, nahi, ye tumhare liye hai, kha jao. This is for you, eat it. And he ensured that she consumed all of it. And exactly 1 year later, in April 1981, on a Thursday night, I was born. So it was like Swami's blessing on my mother and our family. And yes, from there, the journey began. Being the only child for my parents, my father felt that I should get international education and exposure. So so my maternal grandparents then later after retirement settled in US. My uncles were also there. So they applied for a green card for us so that I can study in US and do my MBA in one of the top Ivy League institutions. So that was my father's dream. And so we got the green card in 1997. And then I used to visit America often because it's mandatory to spend some months there. So I used to go in the summer vacation. So one of the advantages in US is they have these regional retreats. So these are 3-day residential programs which are held in every region. So that organizationally, there are 10 regions in US. And the Northeast region is region 1, the Northeast corner of America. So I was a part of that because my grandparents were in Boston. So I used to sit there. I used to visit the retreats there. And one such retreat in 1998 was when Vedanarayan sir, our Sanskrit teacher from high secondary school, had come as a keynote speaker. So in that retreat, he spoke extensively about students' experiences with Swami and Swami's love for students. That was the very first time I was exposed to the tangible love that Swami had for students. Till then, as I said, Swami was a guru, a god, a divine entity in the photograph. And we used to come every year for darshan in Prashanthim. But how that love was manifested, how the divinity was tangibilized, was something that I heard for the first time from Vedaran.
Someone you could relate to personally.
Yes. Someone who was there, who was sharing what he had actually experienced as a teenager and then from then on. And that's what I was at that time, a teenager. So I was really enamored, like, wow, I too must have this experience. And if Swami is what he is, then there isn't any better opportunity than to become a student. So my journey to Prashanthim actually started in US. It's usually US to Mumbai, then to Prashanthilayam. For me, it was Mumbai to US and then back to Prashanthilayam.
And now back to US again.
And then back to US again. And I'll share how that happened. Yeah. So I mentally started wanting to get into Swami's university. I was never a part of the Balvikas program. My mother always used to teach me all the syllabus at home. But there was this desire to join the organization. So Dr. Jagdishan from Malaysia, in 1999, he was a keynote speaker. And how each of them play a role in through their talks and through their inspiration, that youngsters like me can absorb that, and then it molds your life. So in 1998, Ravindran sir introduced me to Swami's system as a student. And then in 1999, Dr. Jagdishan spoke to us about the organization and the role of the youth. And that's when I was motivated to join the organization. And then I did a silent deal in my mind with Swami. I said, Swami, if I stand first in my 12th standard exams, then I will join the organization. Because I was by Swami's grace, I was always a topper. And 12th exams are public exams. So I said, chalo, this is a nice way to extract some special grace from Swami. So, and surprisingly, I stood not only first in my college, I stood first among all the 20 colleges of the HSNC board, which was a group of colleges. And I stood 10th in Mumbai among 60,000 students.
Wow.
10th by 10 marks. So there was only one mark difference between all. So then the deal was sealed and I joined the organization that year. And I could do a lot of work at Dharmakshetra through the youth wing. So to take the story forward, and then by the time I came to my final year, I was interested to do my MBA in Prashanthilayam. So my father had to be convinced. And that's where Swami says that if you are having a different opinion from your parents, you should follow it, but ensure that you take your parents along. So my objective was to convince my father and really get a yes from him that, okay, you want to go to Prashantam for MBA and not to US? Go for it. And why I should go for it and why I want to go for it. And all of those conversations were had over a year. So I came to Prashantanilayam finally through in the summer course, and then on 31st May 2002 I entered the Prashantanilayam hostel, and there began a very interesting journey as a Sai student. I mean, the schedule was very different from what I had imagined. It was a very rigorous schedule, so I'll confess that I lost 25 pounds of weight in the first 6 months. Because being in Mumbai and being in the comfort zone of your own home and then being in a Gurukula system which has very high standards of discipline was a very different experience for someone who had never been in a hostel and never stayed like that. But that never was a point of importance. What was important was the schedule and how I got so involved in that right from the day one. We used to conclude our classes at 2:25. And the Mandir lines used to leave at 2:50. So any teacher who would take even a couple of minutes more than 2:25, the students used to get so fidgety because our attention was always at the clock in the classroom. And the moment the class was over, we used to dash to the hostel.
Yes.
And we used to take our, so tea, coffee, none of those things were important. You go to the washroom, freshen yourself, take your Mandir mat and come to the lines because the lines will leave for the Mandir and it was first come first. Of course, it was class wise, but within the class, it was first come first. So I still remember the walk from the hostel to the Mandir was like a relay. Not a relay, it was like a marathon, but a walking marathon. And all of us were walking together. And the speed picked up with every passing building. And by the time we were at the entrance of the Mandir, it was as if we were possessed. We used to just throw our chappals on either side and the iron filings were sucked in by the magnet. And we used to run to take the first seat and sit in there in the Prashantam, in the Sai Kulwant Hall in the third block. And why did we do all this? I mean, what was the reason for youngsters in their 20s, MBA students who are supposed to be professionals, getting so attracted to this personality who is very different from what they are expected to deliver in their careers? And that made me think that Swami is not about miracles. Swami is not about all those things that are attributed to him. Swami is about the supremeness of his physical presence, which is that indescribable something which is to be experienced, to be believed what it stands for. And that's when I realized that all these great sages, Vasishtha, Valmiki, Vishwamitra, Vyasa, all the four V's, they were having extraordinary powers. They were omniscient, omnipotent, they had all of that. But still they yearned to be in the presence of the avatars like Rama and Krishna. And so it was not the divinity and not the suprahuman power of these avatars, but their presence which distinguished them from any other physical entity that they yearned for. And I guess that's what even the Gopikas yearned for in Krishna's lifetime, what the monkeys, the Vanaras yearned for in Rama's lifetime. And I think that's what the students were experiencing in their lifetime. So it was a love story which was evolving day by day. And we were basking in Swami's physical presence, those expressions, those words, those talks, giving letters, taking Pad Namaskar, being queried on the most trivial of matters, and being reassured through his omniscience on personal issues was an experience to be believing in and to be really be getting impacted by. As William Wordsworth said, it was bliss to have been born then, but to have been young was verily, it was blissful to have been born in the dawn, to be young was verily heaven. Yeah. I mean, those words exactly fit our experience, as a young student in Swami's system.
So when was your first darshan? Did you see Bhagwan before you became a student?
Yes, we used to come to Prashantanilayam almost every year for darshan, especially during Diwali time. Swami used to give Pad Namaskar and Gujarati New Year to all the Gujarati devotees. So we used to make it a point to come at that time. So it was an annual affair to come to Prashantanilayam and have darshan. But student-like darshans were very different, and that's why I explained how it was very different. And for me, the advantage was that I had seen Swami sitting in the last row in Sai Kulwant Hall. So I knew the importance of sitting in the first row.
Yes.
I would like to confess that for students who have not had that experience, to value this opportunity is very difficult because you feel this is how it is and this is how it is meant to be. But if you have sat in the last row,
yes,
if you have waited in lines, I remember for the 75th birthday, my 80-year-old grandfather and me stood outside Hillview Stadium for 4 hours in the early hours of the darshan. And then to walk in on a birthday day just half an hour before darshan and sit in the third block was unimaginably blissful. So I had that supreme blessing to value every darshan in its utmost. And so I can say with great satisfaction looking back that I never missed the opportunity of darshan because I knew its value. I knew the opportunity of sitting so close to Swami, of seeing him uninterrupted, of people getting up, of Sevadal telling you to sit down, of people murmuring around you till Swami comes, was all not there. It was you and Swami and an undisturbed vision of Swami's beautiful form. So yes, that was a great opportunity as a student. And I'd like to share a dream that I got in that context in June 2002. So I said my father wanted me to go abroad. So in that dream, Swami was sitting in a room and we were all new students, new MBA students who had come. So Swami was talking to each one of us. And then when my term came, Swami called me and then he told all the students, this boy wanted to go to Harvard University, but he gave that up and came to Prashantalayam to be with Swami.
Swami said that?
Swami said that.
Oh.
Swami said that in the dream. And I was wondering when the dream got over, in the morning when I got up, you know, when you get up, you have a feeling of it, but it gets concretized over the next few hours, you're ruminating what exactly Swami said. But this is a very vivid dream, and I still remember those words. And I was wondering why Swami said that, and what was the reason for Swami to have said that. But then I'll come back to that later. So that was June 2002, and then so many things happened, and we'll share that on another day. I got an opportunity to get selected for the convocation drama before President Kalam, and the behind the scenes stories, and then Swami blessed me to speak in his presence 4 times in the first 3 months, which was a great opportunity. Then Swami blessed me to accompany him to Kodaikanal in 2003, May, which was a very short trip but very, very impactful trip. So many experiences in those years, and that was the last year apparently when Swami was walking. So I got a distilled essence of that experience of how it is when Swami was walking and doing all the things that he normally did for 50 years. I got that in that one full year of 2002-2003. And then something very interesting happened. This was in 2003, in my second year of MBA. So as I said, I was having the green card. So you have to go back to US every year to renew your green card. And that meant I would have to leave Prashantalayam for a week or two and go to US and come back. And I had never left Prashantalayam since the day I joined. I never went home for vacation and all of that. That's another long story. But yes, I had always been in Prashantalayam since I became a student. So I was in two minds whether to go and renew it or stay back. And I thought, how should I ask Swami for his guidance as to what I should do? So the opportunity came in 2003, October. There was this All India Vice Chancellors Conference.
Yes.
And that was the golden jubilee year of the University Grants Commission. So a very eminent set of vice chancellors, educationists, bureaucrats, policymakers were to come to Prashantalayam. And Swami had desired that students should present 2 evening programs. So one was a presentation on the Gram Seva, and one was a multilingual presentation of students' experiences during their student days. So I was a part of the latter, and I was to give a talk in English. So we were to have a dress rehearsal in Purnachandra Auditorium. So 8 of us, the 4 who were speaking for Gram Seva and the 4 of us who were a part of the multilingual presentation, were in Purnachandra. We were sitting on the stage with the registrar, Professor Lakshmi Narasimham. Mr. Giri was the vice chancellor, and Swami and a few others. And Swami came and sat there, and then the normal conversations, and I had written a letter to Swami. Swami, this is the case. I have to go to US for green card. Please tell me what I should do. The typical way we write to Swami about our personal problems. So I gave the letter to Swami. I was just sitting just near his feet, and he read the letter, and the first thing he said, go to America, he said. So that's not the answer I wanted. I wanted to Swami to say that, no, stay here. Why you want to go to America and all that? But he will do what you don't expect him to do. He'll do exactly the opposite. And for the next half an hour, he kept on teasing me, go to America, go to America. He kept on saying that. And I knew he was joking. He was spiritually bullying me, if I can use that term. And I was waiting for the real instruction to come. But that didn't happen. Then Swami got snacks served to us. And it was idli and chutney snack. So I was sitting near Swami's feet. And then while I was eating, Swami looked at me and said in Hindi, he smiled and said, America jayega, to wahan pe chutney nahi milega. So everybody around me started laughing that Swami is really taken this boy on a bullying tour today. And every aspect he is drilling it into him.
And if you go to America, you will not get chutney.
You will not get chutney. So then, and then he left. He didn't give an answer. He left. He said, I will tell. And he left. In fact, a very interesting thing happened at the end of our snack. Swami wanted to get up from his chair. And by then he used to take help to walk. And Prishti brother and Nitin Acharya were there. So, but we were sitting just near Swami's feet. So he wanted to get up, so he looked at us and said, he indicated that we should help him to get up. But our hands were dirty. We had just eaten idli chutney with that. There's no spoon concept with Swami. You eat with your hands. So, I mean, we looked at him and we said, our hands are dirty. So he again said the same thing. So then we forgot that our hands are dirty. And with our dirty hands, we held Swami's hand. With our jutta hands, we held Swami's hand. Or rather, he grabbed our hands and then he got up. And then, apparently in Telugu, he said, don't worry if the hands are dirty. Ensure that the heart never becomes dirty.
He said that?
He said that.
Wow.
So, I mean, we are so fussy with all the rituals and expect that God has that level of expectation, the purity, the cleanliness, the hygiene, the beauty, the fragrance, everything that we associate with Swami. In fact, in one discourse, Swami had said that these are the things you think God wants because these are the things which makes man happy. He wants velvet clothing, fragrant room, beautiful flowers. All of these are typically what attract a human definition of comfort. But this is not what God wants. God wants you to help those who are the most poor and the most forlorn of his creation. That will give him the greatest joy. So, and so that's what really strikes me that when Swami held our, in Hindi as we say, our jhuta hands and got up, that whenever the avatar comes, he is not bothered about these things which we hold in so much of importance. Rama ate the jhuta bear of Shabri, and Krishna used to share the meals with his friends and eat the dust and the sand of Gokul and the Yamuna river. And here was Swami doing something very similar. Thereby breaking our notions of what God is and what God stands for. He really stands for something which is beyond all this, because his relation with us is at the atmic level, at the level of our true love, our true being. So coming back to idli and chutney, so when we finished and when I was walking out, one of the research scholars said, what was Swami telling you? Then I told him the whole story. And he said, he narrated an experience which he had in the previous year. Swami had called some of the research scholars in the interview room, and he was giving he was talking to them, and then again they were served snacks, and in that the snacks were idli and chutney. So as a Swami's style, every time he will try and ask you questions to drive home a lesson. So he asked them, boys, what is idli and what is chutney? So everybody gave different answers. Then finally, the students' collective answer was, Swami, God is idli because idli is big, the main portion, and world is chutney because it is a side dish. So then Swami said, no, world is idli and God is chutney because without chutney, there is no value for idli. Similarly, without God, this world is tasteless. It is useless. So then the research scholar said, when Swami said, if you go to America, you will not get chutney, he meant, if you go to America, you will not get God. You will get the world, which is idli, but you will not get God, which is the chutney. So that struck me and that stayed. And then I made the decision that I don't want to go back to renew my green card. I gave up my green card. I continued to be in Prashanthinilayam. And something which people hold in such high esteem, to get a green card in US is like dream come true. But with that one word or one indication from Swami, what better opportunity than to stay with your master, with your guru, your God, and benefit from that when he's himself indicated that, rather than go for something which is apparently very material and very worldly, if you will. So that's how the thing, the course of my life changed in that one interaction in 2003, October. And then 2004, March, April, we finished our MBA programs. And then we stayed back in Vrindavan. And a lot of experiences there, but I'll keep it for another time. I would like to talk about my journey with Swami in this interaction. So 2004, April, May, I was in Vrindavan with Swami. All of us used to use our vacation time to get the most opportunities with Swami in Vrindavan. So in on 31st of May, that's the time when I was technically losing my status as a student. So I decided that I'll finally go home. I had not been home for 2 years. So I wrote a letter to Swami, "Swami, I am going home. Whenever you come back to Prashanthinilayam, I'll immediately come there." So I went home, and then on 7th of June, Swami left for Prashanthinilayam, 2004. And on 9th of June, I left Mumbai and came here on 10th June morning. So I came here, and I had this great anxiety. What instruction will Swami give me? I was waiting for Swami's instructions, what I should do next. And I used to tell my mother, even that day morning in the train, Udyan Express, I was sharing with my mom, I don't know what will happen. Students have to wait for Swami's instructions for so many months, sometimes years. I want to stay with Swami, but what is his will? She said, "Why do you worry? If you have faith in Swami, leave it to him. That is his decision. It's not yours. By becoming anxious, you're not going to solve any problem." And with that state of mind, I went to Mandir that day for darshan, and we were sitting just at the bhajan hall door backside. In fact, you were also waiting at that time. You just recovered from your illness, and you had relocated from Bangalore to Prashanthinilayam.
Yes.
So I remember chatting with you behind the Ganesha statue on those mornings.
Yes.
So this was on 10th of June, and Swami finished darshan, and he was walking back. And then he spoke to a couple of my classmates who were also just back, who had just finished their MBA. Then he called me and he said, "Kya karta hai? What are you doing?" I said, "Swami, MBA ho gaya. I completed my MBA." So even before I could blink, Swami said, so simply, he said, PhD karo, do PhD. It was as if it was already decided, only communication was pending, and it was a suspense communication. And not once, but he said 6 times, PhD karo, PhD karo. He looked around and he was making declarations, do PhD, do PhD. Then he called Mr. Chakravarti and said, "This boy should do PhD." And after all of that was over, then Swami called me separately, and then he whispered into my ears. He said, "You told me last year that you wanted to go abroad. Are you going?"
Oh.
So that was 8 months after he gave that indirect indication. And those were the years when Swami was apparently pretending that he was forgetting things. So here was a reminder that he exactly knew what he was talking to whom, even in terms of time and context. Of course, which is the truth, but we get deluded by his maya, as it is called. So I said, "No, Swami, I'm here." He said, "Sure?" I said, "Yes, Swami, I'm here." He said, "Very happy." And it didn't end there. Now, this thing continued for the next 3 years. In 2005, when we went to, and Swami blessed me to accompany him to Kodaikanal, one fine day in the evening session in Sai Shruti, he told me to speak on the life of Shirdi Sai Baba and Swami. He said, "Do a comparative analysis of the life of Swami and Shirdi Baba." And I wasn't prepared. But believe me, when I started speaking, it was as if those two lives were appearing before me and I could draw parallels. And many parallels which I had never thought of till then emerged in my talk. And after that, I sat down, and then Swami said, he told everybody gathered, he said, "This boy, last year he was going to go to America. Passport, visa, everything was ready. But last minute he cancelled." So nobody knew what Swami was talking about. I knew what he was talking about. And then it was like acknowledgement every time. Again in 2006, This was in December 22nd, I still remember. 22nd November, I had got my gold medal for MPhil. President Kalam was the chief guest. And I still remember Swami had introduced me on the stage while I was after I got my gold medal. And there was a very, 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 very memorable photograph. I cherish that of Dr. Kalam and I shaking hands. And Swami standing exactly in the middle, wow, as if introducing me to him. And he's so happy, he's smiling, of introducing a student to the President of India. It's an opportunity unimaginable. You always think, what is it that you get in Prashant Lim in a very worldly way? There are so many such instances which we cannot imagine in any other place that we've got here. So that was I was remembering that incident and sitting exactly 1 month later, 22nd December, I was sitting on the backside of Bhajan Hall thinking, oh, 1 month is over. Swami had introduced me to the president. And when will he talk to me again? Those were the kind of thoughts we always had.
Yes.
Research questions, career aspirations, all these other things were left to the college and when we were working. But in Mandir, the constant aspiration was that when will we get our next opportunity to interact with Swami. So just then when I was thinking, one of my classmates came running from the backside of the Bhajan Hall. And he said, Swami is calling you. Even before he could finish, he just ran back. And then I went from the backside Bhajan Hall, came to the frontside Bhajan Hall. And it seems Swami had asked him, where is that boy who wanted to go to America? So my classmate of mine didn't know what Swami was talking about. So Professor Lakshmi Narasimham was the registrar, he was there. So he knew the context. So then that's how he called me. Then when I entered the interview room after that, Swami looked at me and then he smiled and he said, "Ha, this boy wanted to go to America, but he is in Prashant Nilayam." I never wanted to go to America, but Swami always used to talk that way. But yes, and then again in 2007 May, Swami had blessed me to accompany him to Kodaikanal. And that day after I had given a talk, and then Swami was talking to us in the Sai Shruti drawing room, and he asked Mr. G.K. Raman, who was the chairman of Sundaram Finance, and he was a convener of the Tamil Nadu State Trust. He said, do you know what this boy has studied? He pointed at me and asked. So he said, no, Swami. Then Swami said, tell him what you have studied. So I said, Swami, I finished my MBA. And Swami repeated. He said, oh, he's finished his MBA. I said, Swami, I finished my MPhil. Then Swami said, MPhil kuda aipoyindi. He's also finished his MPhil. I said, Swami, now I'm doing PhD. Swami said, oh, see, now he's doing his PhD. Then Swami said, this boy wanted to go to America, but for Swami's sake, he stayed back. And see how educated he is now. And before he could finish that sentence, he was choked. He was so overwhelmed with that feeling that at my indication, this boy stood back. And thereafter, Swami never mentioned about that, me wanting to go to America. But that was the level at which Swami appreciated a small decision, which in my opinion is not a big deal. But for him, it was such a big deal that at a small indication, you gave up a worldly opportunity and you stayed back with me. And he acknowledged it on so many occasions and said that because he stayed back with me, he's learned so much and I'm so very happy. So that quote which we often refer to, if you take one step towards me, I will take 100 steps towards you. Here a small step that we take to be close to Swami, and there is 100 ways in which he showers his grace and his blessings on you. So each of those experiences, I've never had very larger than life experiences, but I've had very insightful experiences which reaffirm your inner connect with Swami, your thought processes, your prayers, and the way he responds to each one of them, and the churning that goes into it in order to reach the culmination. So this was one facet of that.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan Baba. And today, in the studios, we have someone who has been serving in Bhagwan's institutions, coming all the way from the United States, Dr. Ashok Srinivasan. Sir has been a visiting faculty in the Department of Maths and Computer Science since 2004. He has been working in the Florida State University since 2001, 17 years in this institution, and recently he's moved to University of West Florida as a William Nistel Eminent Scholar Chair and Professor. So prior to this, Sir did his engineering, chemical engineering in REC Trichy, which is now NIT. In those days it used to be called Regional Engineering College, now it is National Institute of Technology. And he moved to the US for his master's in polymer engineering, and subsequently he was in the University of California, Santa Barbara, where he did his PhD from 1991 till 1996, and also he served there as visiting assistant professor. Later on he moved to University of Illinois, where he was doing his postdoc for 2 years, and he also served in IIT Bombay as assistant professor for 2 years before moving on to Florida State University. And it was during the years when he was pursuing his PhD in the University of California that Bhagwan decided to enter his scheme of things, and that's when an interesting journey began, and it led to him pining to become a part of his mission in serving his institution in Prashanthi Nilayam, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. In fact, he is here to celebrate, to be part of the occasion when the silver anniversary of the Department of Maths and Computer Science was observed for 2 days, the last 2 days, July 7th and July 8th, 2018. So he was there as one of the eminent guests participating for this occasion. So sir has been coming to Parthi almost every year for the last few years, because he has been very deeply involved in the teaching and in the growth of the department. And we are really grateful to Bhagwan that, you know, Swami has picked such eminent people to guide his students in the university. So with prayers to Bhagwan, we begin this conversation. Thank you so much, sir, for coming to studio and for being part of Dressed with Divinity.
It's my pleasure to be here. You know, so I'm fortunate that Swami has given me an opportunity to visit this university and visit Radio Sai.
So let's go back to where the journey began. You were mentioning that somewhere in 1993 is when you got introduced to Bhagwan, right? So if you can just go back, let us go back to that time.
So I was anti-religion. I wasn't anti-God, or rather I didn't disbelieve in God, but I kind of felt that he had created a pretty bad universe. So,
oh, is it?
I wasn't very happy with God, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I actually fell into good company.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some Sai devotees, and they invited me for a special satsang that we're holding on the University of California, Santa Barbara campus. And so they said there'll be free food. So I said, okay, bhajans are the price I pay for getting free food. You know, as a bachelor, it's not easy to get good food, you know.
Mm.
So anyway, the food was pretty excellent. So when they said we have weekly bhajans, I said, okay, I'll come along, you know, in anticipation that I would have food. But their regular bhajans don't have food, you know. And so here I was being anti-God and listening to all these songs about Rama, Krishna and all that, and not getting food at the end. So when I got back to my dorm that day, I decided I'm never going back to that satsang again, you know. And then that night when I slept, I had a dream of Swami.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up as soon as Swami appeared in my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a feeling of bliss. And I had a feeling of the bliss the whole day, which was something very different from anything I had experienced earlier, you know. I sprained my ankle that day, but even though I had physical pain, I was still feeling bliss, you know, which was very contrary to a very materialistic view, where if you are really the body, then you would suffer when your body is suffering. But I was still feeling the bliss even though the body was suffering, you know. So it was a very novel experience, this feeling of bliss. So
you said Swami came in your dreams, but what was it like? Did Swami say anything, or you saw something different? Were you sort of probably
until that time, you had only seen Swami in picture, right? Did you read anything about him? Or
No, I had not read anything about him yet because this was a pretty new experience, right? I had gone for the food, not for spirituality. So I hadn't read anything about him. Mm. Of course, you know, Swami himself is quite well known, right? So everyone in India probably knows about his materializations and all that, which I didn't believe, of course, you know. But this was a very novel experience. When Swami came in a dream, I immediately got up, woke up. So it's not that he did anything that I could really talk about because I woke up as soon as he appeared.
So it was just for a glimpse. It was
yes, correct, for a few seconds. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that feeling was something very different from anything I had experienced.
Like a burst of bliss.
Yes, which lasted a whole day. You know. Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
So. That was a pretty unique experience, which you don't get by your usual pleasure by eating chocolate and all that doesn't give you the same kind of bliss, you know. Mm. So, I said this is a pretty, novel experience. So maybe I should, go back to bhajans.
So even though you had all these questions about, you know, spirituality and believing in God and all that, but somehow this was something which you felt was indeed special.
Yes, correct, because it's a real experience, right? And none of your materialistic philosophies explains something like that, you know.
Wow, fantastic. So that increased your curiosity to know more about Swami?
At least I wanted to get the same experience, you know.
Okay.
So then I started going to bhajans regularly, and I had some good friends, you know, who were very sincere about following Swami's teachings, you know. So, for example, one day we were going, I didn't have, my car wasn't working, so I used to get a ride from them. And one day I was saying, oh, it'll be good to have a Volvo, you know, instead of this small car. And then they were saying, oh, that is so materialistic and all that. Then I realized that they took Swami's teaching very seriously, you know, that is, you should avoid desires and all that. So I think, apart from the experience Swami gave, the company he gave also, made a big difference.
Oh, wow. So when you watched those guys and those people, you felt there was something different in them.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. They took it, they took spirituality quite seriously.
And that impressed you?
Especially one of those people was a kind of a very saintly kind of person, you know. In fact, he's at IIT Chennai now and he used to visit the department to hear occasionally earlier, you know. So it definitely made a impact on me.
I mean, you saw these people whom you respect and at the same time who are so serious about following Swami's teachings.
Correct. Yeah, because in India, usually, they teach you a lot of stuff, but no one practices. Like, you may remember Swami's play when he was young, he had created where the elders say something, but they don't follow it.
Typically,
that's how it is in India, right? So, or in fact, most of the world.
Yes.
So, this was the first time I had experienced people who actually practiced what they preached, you know. So, it was a pretty novel experience.
So, you started thinking a little more seriously about Bhagwan and his teachings as you saw them.
That's correct. And so, they lent me some books. I think the first book I read was probably The Holy Man and the Psychiatrist, written by a person from California. And then
Dr. Samuel Sanders.
Correct, yeah. And then I read Professor Kasturi's book, Loving God. And Loving God convinced me that Swami was an avatar, but it was hard for me to accept his teachings, especially because he was saying that you had to be perfectly pure and perfectly without desires and all that. And as when we are leading a material life, you know, only the desires and fulfillment of the desires actually give us happiness, right?
Yes.
So
that's what gives you the kick in life.
Yeah, that's right. So it almost seemed like, then what is the fun in life?
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
So it was kind of a, very difficult to accept the teaching, though in retrospect, I should have thought that the feeling of bliss I got was not from fulfillment of desire. I should have thought of that, but I really didn't think of that, you know. So it was very hard for me to accept that we need to be perfectly pure. So that was probably the hardest teaching, I think, I had to adjust to.
So, I mean, you sort of felt that, yeah, it's a great thought, it's a noble idea, but it's not practical.
I didn't think it was practical for me. The problem for me is if I believed that it was not feasible, it would have been easy for me to accept. But I had these couple of friends who actually were pretty perfect, you know. So I believe that I need to be at that stage, which I didn't believe that I could actually
be there.
Do. You know?
Yeah, so it's really a tough... tough mountain to climb.
Yes,
it felt like that.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And when you initially get into spirituality, you kind of have this perfect ideal, right? Which is sometimes, I think, very difficult for you to yourself meet, right? I think as we live a little longer, we are a little bit more accepting of our imperfection. We realize that that perfection is a destination. It is not the first step you take.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So initially, it was kind of... very difficult because I believe that Swami wanted us at that moment to become perfect, you know. Mm. And I think now I believe that Swami really wants that to be our destination rather than a precondition for spiritual advancement. Mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, you begin the journey, you are in that journey.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you have many people also who are with you in that journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So now you sort of saw so many Sai devotees, and perhaps the interest to see Swami also would have increased by now?
Correct. Yeah, so I was interested in seeing him, and especially when I went to India, I was going to get married that year. So I wanted to see Swami before that and get his blessings. Yeah.
Mm. So you did come?
Yes, so I came and Swami was in Vrindavan, which worked out to be a little convenient because I could stay in a relative's house and come. I don't know how I would have taken the ashram experience at that stage in my spiritual life.
Mm.
So I went to Vrindavan and had darshan of him.
So how was that Vrindavan experience?
It was actually not good. You know, so it's rather my expectations were too high. You know, so by then about 6 months had passed. You know, because it was early '93 or so when I started getting involved with, was exposed to Swami's teachings, and then it was summer when I went to see him. And I had a few dreams of Swami and all that over there, you know. And in our personal life, you know, in our spiritual experience, you know, we often have a very close relationship with Swami, right? So I was expecting something similar, like when I go and see him, he's going to say, "Hi, Ashoka, I was waiting to see you," or something like that, you know. And then I go there, and it's so very crowded, so I didn't even get into the shed in Vrindavan. I was sitting outside. Inside the compound, but outside the shed, you know.
Okay.
And fortunately, Swami actually came very close to me. But I didn't realize that that was anything unique. You know, I didn't realize the importance of this first row thing at the time. Mm. You know. And so I was very unhappy that Swami didn't even look at me and talk to me. You
physically
know?
Acknowledge your presence and your arrival.
Yeah, correct, correct. Yeah. And that day, actually, when I slept also, it was, I had a, you know, physically, I was feeling very uncomfortable and all that, you know. So it was a reasonably bad experience. And I again said, well, should I really be continuing with the spirituality stuff or not, you know. And then I went the next day again.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Swami ignored me.
Oh.
But then the next day, just internally, I kind of felt that it's very immature to, you know, base your spirituality on whether Swami physically looked at you or not. You know, yeah.
So that somehow came. That's an interesting thing. I mean, when you look back now, you're sort of maturing in your spiritual understanding.
Yeah, maybe Swami took away some of the impurity or something through the physical difficulties and all that were faced, right? And gave the wisdom also to continue with it, you know.
So even though sort of physically the experience was not to your expectations, but still you sort of reconciled with it.
Correct, yeah.
and said, okay, no, let's go on the path and
yes,
let's still explore.
Yeah, you know. And you know, those days I used to have lots of dreams of Swami, maybe
okay.
Every week or even once in a few days and
oh, wow.
all that, you know, and sometimes even as other avatars and so on. You know, so it was, there were a lot of spiritual internal experiences that were...
So those continued?
Yes, correct. Those continued, yeah.
Okay, so that was your connect with Swami actually?
Yes, correct. So I used to get lots of dreams of Swami and...
So you said, you know, and notwithstanding whatever happened in the physical presence, you know, that connect is still there and that's going on. So let me just go by that.
Correct, yes, yeah, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So you came back to Parthi again, Parthi or Vrindavan again?
I never went to Vrindavan. No, I went to Vrindavan only once, which is another experience which was again not very good, but it taught a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But I came to Parthi again. So I used to come to Parthi every time I visited India.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, it was not that frequent, but I did visit Parthi and I stayed in the sheds and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've gone through that
90s.
Whole experience.
So, and coming from the US, it would have been really quite a challenging experience.
Yes, correct. It was pretty a tough time staying in the sheds. Yeah.
Mm. So, but did the darshan anyway compensate for it, or the darshan also was again not your expectation?
So subsequent to the Vrindavan visit, I had nice experiences in darshan. You know, I never got first row or something. I think I once got when I came with my father, I once got second row. My father was sitting in the first row and got Pada Namaskar. But Swami looked at my father, but he didn't look at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but even then it was kind of a nice experience. So I enjoyed the spiritual ambience and so on of darshan by then.
So you like the prashanti environment, the peace or whatever, the quietness, sitting long hours in the darshan, the queues in the canteen, all that was okay?
Yeah, all that was okay. It was just staying at night in that shed was... Yeah. Pretty bad, you know, but there were some nice things, like, you know, like in the shed, a lot of poor people and all that, right? So I was very cold and, you know, when I woke up, I found someone had put some blanket on me and all that, one of these poor people who are surrounding me. So it was kind of, there were good things also, you know, you see that there's goodness in so many people despite their own personal circumstances being pretty bad, you know. So it was... and I used to get sick also after every time I visited, but it was still felt worth going through
worth
that.
Worth going through that. Oh, wow. Fantastic. And so in the meanwhile, perhaps you would have also started reading more about Swami and exploring more in terms of who he is and what are his teachings. Did that also continue simultaneously?
Yes, I used to read a lot about Swami. Actually, these days I don't read that much because I think I need to practice a lot of what I already read. You know, but I did read a lot of what people had written about Swami and what Swami had said. Also, that was basically my introduction to spirituality, because until then, you know, the type of religion you learn when you are young really doesn't teach you much about spiritual philosophy. You know.
So, you just follow some tradition if your parents want you to do
correct,
it.
Correct, that's right, yeah, yeah. And then you see people, as Swami says, you know, they say one thing, but they actually do something else. So that kind of disillusions you, you know. And so it was good to see.
Then you just feel it's better to keep God away from all this.
Yeah, know. That's right. You know, so God had pretty bad representatives when he was young. And I think one of the good things about Swami is that he has very good representatives.
Wow. Fantastic. So can I ask you, was there any moment in all this exploration of what Swami is and, you know, what is the core of his teachings and all that, was there any moment when you really felt connected with Swami? Of course, Swami was coming in your dreams and all that. But did you really accept him as divine, or there were question marks? And was there any incident when, you know, everything just got resolved and from that day you didn't have any questions whatsoever?
Basically, as for accepting for me as God, I think I accepted after reading Loving God. I was convinced He was God. Mm. I didn't like the fact that God had such high standards for His devotee. You know, so that was something that was a little troubling for me. But I used to have doubts. You know, so anything. For example, when Swami said some Sanskrit word, He would say, "This is how it is broken down. This has meaning." I used to always think, "Oh, how does He know Sanskrit?" So let me look up the dictionary. You know, and so at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, they had a very good South Asian library. So I used to always look up a dictionary, and generally it turned out to be correct, you know. Mm. So I had another friend who was also a Sai devotee who also used to keep getting doubts all the time. Mm-hmm. So once we had these doubts, and then we said, okay, definitely these 10 avatars, and definitely I haven't heard of an avatar called Satya Sai avatar in the tradition. So let us go and see if there's anything in the sacred scriptures in India that mention this, you know. And we went to this library. I don't know if I went with him. I believe I went with him, or I might have gone alone. And I went to South Asian library, opened Bhagavatam at a random page, and then it says he has innumerable avatars, and in the Kali Yuga he'll come with such glory and such a special name that is so sacred that we won't mention it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And then that resolved all my doubts.
So the book said that that name will not be mentioned.
Yeah, when I read it.
Okay.
Then I so that kind of at that time all my doubts went away.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of days I went again and tried to find the same statement in the Bhagavatam, but I couldn't find it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it just appeared to clear my doubts or something, but at that moment was a transformative moment in which I stopped doubting everything Swami mm-hmm. said and trying to verify everything that He was saying, you know.
Oh, wow. So, so from that moment you felt that no more questions?
Correct, yeah.
Oh, wow. So after that, you know, once faith happens, of course, the journey becomes perhaps a little more easier, perhaps more brighter.
Yeah, true. Though, of course, you know, in spirituality, you are always climbing a mountain, right?
Yes.
So you always have some challenges. So
yes.
One challenge goes and something else comes, you know. Mm.
So it was during this time that you started getting involved with the university, like once you had sort of your mind was set, no more doubts, no more questions, and yes, we have to practice His teachings. And so was it during this time that, you know, you thought, let me do something for the Swami and His mission?
Well, I thought of doing it, but I didn't actually do anything.
You know? Okay.
So, one of my colleague friends, I should say, because I was a postdoc, he was a professor mm-hmm. at Urbana-Champaign, used to be a visiting faculty at the university here.
Mm-hmm.
So I told Swami, you know, it'll be good if I can also do something for your university. So if you give me the opportunity, I'll be happy to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept thinking like that once in a while, for a few years, right? And then it was about maybe around 2004 or so, then a thought occurred to me, this is a gap of some 8 years or so. So
okay.
For about 8 years, I had this intention of doing something and didn't do anything. And then a thought occurred to me that, if I really want something for myself, right, like mm-hmm. if I'm hungry, I don't say, Swami, if you give me the opportunity, then I'll eat over dinner or something. You know? If I really need something, I'll go and actually get it for myself, right? Mm-hmm. So it was very clear to me that I was not putting in the effort because I didn't feel I really had to do it, that it was my job, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I said, okay, let me do something, especially I knew someone who was already a visiting faculty. So I talked to my friend at Urbana-Champaign with whom I was still in touch.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is George Ordell, Professor mm-hmm. George Ordell. And he introduced me to Professor Panchanathan from ASU.
Mm-hmm.
And Professor Panchanathan and David Grease were organizing a workshop on parallel computing, which is my research area, in 2004, which was just a few months after I had talked to them, you know. So it was kind of a coincidence that the workshop was on my research specialty.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, I'll come and I'll give a talk over there. And that's how my interaction at the university started.
Oh, wow. So how was it to come to Prashantilayam and now get associated with the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning?
It was a very nice experience. You know, Swami was not there at the time because he had been injured and he had gone to Bangalore. And then It was, you know, when I came in, I said, okay, the Satya Sai people, they must be good at meditating and all that, right? But they can't really understand computer science research, you know. So what I did is I created a very introductory material on parallel computing. Mm-hmm. And I had slides on that and all that just to give a very basic thing. Mm-hmm. But I thought clearly if I talk research stuff, they can't follow it, right? Mm-hmm. And there are other professors, very famous people in computer science, actually, like Keshav Pingali and all that, who actually had prepared research talks. Mm. You know, and then they gave those talks, and people not only understood it, they asked very insightful questions, and they said, you know, like they pointed out some issues that, and one of them was saying, you know, like I have given this talk at so many places, no one had actually pointed out this issue before, yeah. And all that, you know, and here I was with this very introductory talk, you know, but the students were very polite. They said, sir, it was very nice. You have summarized in two lectures what we learned in our course, which indirectly was kind of saying that we already know the material. So it was kind of, that's when I realized that there was a lot of intellectual depth also to the university. It was not just a spiritual place, you know. Mm. And this context, maybe I'll give you my experience of the second bad visit to Vrindavan.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So the work was supposed to end on a particular day. But of course, Swami was not there. Everyone wanted to have Swami's darshan, right? So we decided to end the workshop one day in advance by squeezing more material into the previous days and then go to Vrindavan and have Swami's darshan, right? Mm-hmm. So we did that. We went there. And of course, you know, because of the workshop and all that, we got a good position in Vrindavan and all that. And Swami came around our side most of the time. When he came very close to us, he didn't even look at us. He moved to the other side, crossed us, and moved back to our side of the
wall.
And, you know, making it very clear he's ignoring us. You know, then we kind of realized that he's probably not happy about our ignoring our duty to do the workshop for the expected length of time rather than come back for his darshan. You know.
So I think so. There were one you saw that this university is. Cannot be dismissed as something which is not intellectually oriented.
Correct.
And you also saw that the chancellor of the university also is someone who wanted that when duty is God, that duty has to be done.
Correct.
As perfectly as it can. You cannot compromise on that.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Duty was the primary thing, you know. So duty is devotion.
Wow. So that was some learning. I think perhaps every time you came to Parthi, there have been some new learning or the other.
Correct. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So any more moments with Swami or any more sort of unique experiences in your subsequent visits to Parthi? After that, perhaps you got the chance to sit in the veranda if you got associated with the university. So perhaps darshan sitting would have been a little easier and more enjoyable?
Definitely. And not staying in the shed was another advantage. And so the interesting thing was when Swami's darshan was a little easier to get, it was very hard for me to get Swami's darshan. Mm-hmm. And generally after 2004, Swami's darshan was a little bit more difficult to get.
Yes.
But then I got the veranda seats, right? So, you know, the individual experience doesn't necessarily match the collective experience, you know. And as the years progressed, I felt more and more energy while having Swami's darshan, you know. So you know, as you mentioned, you have all these small little learning experiences each time, which were quite insightful.
So any memorable moment in your trips to Parthi after 2004?
Are you talking in relation to Swami or in relation to students? Because I think Swami's students are almost as special as Swami in terms of the experiences you have with
So you can talk about both.
You know, one kind of interesting thing that happened was once when I was going to Darshan, on the way, I like ripe mangoes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they were selling ripe mangoes just outside the ashram. And I was walking, I was thinking whether I should buy that. Then I said, no, I shouldn't give into sensual desires close to the ashram, you know. So I ignored the mangoes and I went in. Then when I went for darshan, that day actually Swami... the prasadam that day was mangoes. Okay. And usually the students, you know, like after Swami blesses it, the students distribute the mangoes first among themselves and then give to the others, right?
Mm.
And this time they actually gave it directly to us, and not many people were actually sitting there. So I actually got the second mango or something like that, you know. And then Swami came over there and he didn't talk to me, but he kind of, as if he was talking to the person in front of me, you know, he was, I don't understand Telugu, but he seemed to be asking like from his thing whether he was happy with that and all that, you know. So it was kind of a interesting experience that you give up some desire and then Swami actually satisfies.
He's always there. I mean, it's not as if your life is going to become boring or dull or insipid, you know.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
he's going to make it beautiful.
Yeah,
it's just that, you know, if spirituality is not a very boring journey, you know, it is just that these little pleasures of life, you don't pray for it. They come to you if they have to come to you.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. Because he has these different, God has these different aspects, right? Like one is love, compassion, all there's justice, discipline and all that, right?
Yes.
So sometimes we focus on the discipline, but he also has this other aspect of compassion and maybe indulgence for the devotees.
Yes. So your journey, you know, initially, when you started off, you know, you always had this feeling that, you know, it's a very difficult journey, you know, it's a tough thing to crack. And, you know, I don't know if I'll ever, you know, be there. But with time, how did it feel? I mean, do you still feel that way that, you know, yeah, this is good, but this is really very difficult. I don't know if I can ever be anywhere there.
Well, no, I no longer feel that way in the sense that it seems spirituality is difficult. But if you look at people who are not spiritual, they are going through tough times in life also, right? It's not like the material life is actually easy. But if you're into spirituality, you actually have a support, right? Whereas I see that, especially once you age, you see the difference between people who have led a spiritual life and people who have led a material life. You know, when I see people sometimes, you know, face terminal illness and all that, and they're not into spirituality, the type of worry they face is very different from the type of worry terminally ill relatives I've had who are into spirituality have faced. You know, you're basically, anyway, life has troubles. The question is, are you going to face it without the help, or are you going to face it with the help of someone who can actually do something about it, right?
So you are in a better position to deal with life and its challenges. You are in a better position to take life's ups and downs.
Correct, yes.
So that is the most practical sort of takeaway from being on the spiritual path.
Yes, correct, yeah. So I think in Lalita Sahasraramam, there's a saying where they mention Devi as very difficult to obtain through the external world and easy to obtain through the internal path, you know. And so basically what happens is that when you're looking externally, there's a lot of noise compared to the signal. Right? So it is very hard to detect the spiritual signal amongst all the noise.
Okay?
But if you observe enough, then you can actually observe it, which is why I think once you get older, you kind of often become more spiritual. But if you actually look at more internally, right, you can actually observe the signal very easily. You know, the peace and the bliss and all that you can actually obtain very easily when you are looking at spirituality from an internal perspective. But if you're focusing solely on the external, then it does become very difficult. But eventually, if you observe enough, you do observe that the spiritual people are handling even the external world better than the so-called materialist. You know, even though in principle the materialist should be able to handle the material world well, but if you look at all the material philosophies, they actually fail miserably. You know, so if you look at communism and all that, right, in 70 years they caused so much suffering and then self-destructed, right? And so the material philosophies actually are neither give you the spiritual success nor material success. And spirituality doesn't promise you material success, but it gives you both the material success and the spiritual success.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, fantastic. In fact, I think for every material question, there is a spiritual answer.
Correct.
But for spiritual questions, there is no material answer.
Yes, correct. Yeah, that's very insightful because that is a very fundamental belief in the Indian intellectual tradition that accepts the Vedas, that from the material, you cannot actually obtain spiritual answers.
So I think with these kind of understanding sort of coming to you experientially, isn't it? I think that is something, you know, it's one thing to read about them and know about them. And if you go to Balvikas or things like that, probably, you know, all these things will sort of bounce off your ears. But I think you got all this through real experience, you know, because you were in the material world and then now you are sort of hoisted onto the spiritual world, and trying to grapple all this. And so now when you look at your life, you know, how does it feel? That suppose Swami would not have sort of entered into your life, how would had it been, and how is it now? What do you, when you reflect on this, what do you think?
I think life would have been pretty meaningless, you know, because the pursuit of happiness, external happiness, you know, every time you get something, then you you know, after some time you get bored of it, right? So the material world never really fulfills your real aspirations, because those are not your real aspirations. So I think basically there's a huge marketing effort that goes into you making you believe that the material world is what is giving you pleasure, you know. So there's basically a delusion market out there, you know. So getting out of the delusion industry, I think, is the biggest achievement that spirituality can confer on you.
And the biggest thing is, you know, you know the difference between what is peace and what is pleasure. You know the difference between what is pleasure and what is happiness. I think, you know, I think once that understanding comes, at least intellectually, then you strive to put that into practice.
Correct. Yeah, because when you have you have duality, right? You have, for sukha, you have a opposite dukkha, right?
Yes.
But for ananda, you don't have an opposite. Right? So we should be seeking ananda, the non-dual bliss, rather than sukha. You know.
I think that's very beautiful. If you want sukha, then you'll always have dukkha. As long as the pleasure is an interval between two pains.
Yeah.
But if you seek bliss, then that's what it is.
Yeah, because beyond duality.
It's beyond duality. Yeah, wonderful. I mean, probably you won't have ever imagined 25 years ago that you'll be talking about bliss and duality and sukha and dukkha. Sounding like a monk.
Yeah. Well, in linear programming, you have duality, but that's a different type of duality you talk about.
Okay, now since you're talking about linear programming, can you also share something? So, because you are a researcher, and you were in polymer engineering, and then I don't know what prompted you to go to computer science. Something about computer science would have definitely fascinated you. But as you research and as you look at what goes on into creating these algorithms and, you know, these softwares, high performance computing, do you also at some points see the supernatural in all these things? You know, are there any sort of supernormal moments in your research, you know, when you see that, wow, this is fantastic, you know, the way this thing is operating?
Well, rather, I would say that I'm seeing the limitations of the algorithms and the logic and all that in capturing reality, you know, because right now I'm actually working on research on simulation-based public policy analysis for health. And when you're dealing with public policy analysis, you need to look at the human aspect and the pure science aspect, right? Like, for example, right now we are looking at some disease spread. So the disease itself spread is, in some sense, natural science aspect, but it also is impacted by how humans interact with each other and with the environment. And then you see that you know, a lot of the scientific models and all that are actually not very effective, especially when it comes to public policy level, because partly because the human aspect is difficult to model. And I think the traditional scientific belief has been that the human is pretty much a material system, right? So basically, Schrodinger's equation perhaps explains a lot of what is happening in the world. The only thing is it's too difficult for us to integrate it over the whole universe. I have had physicists say that really all the problem in physics is computational, because we need to integrate Schrodinger's equation over the whole universe. We can't do it. So the fundamental problem is computational. But actually, when you look at it, when you're trying to model the human aspect and all that, you see that there are very serious limitations in science, and I think that is posing some very fundamental problems. And I think that actually comes from a view that the human is basically a material system, you know.
So because of your limited view of the human, you're not able to find go beyond that to see the solutions.
Correct. So basically, the idea is how do we know that all these things work, right? So in science, you try to identify some fundamental phenomena, model it, and maybe integrate with fundamental models for many different fields, and then try to get an idea for the whole system, right? So science traditionally developed through reductionism, where individual phenomena are studied very well. Okay, so right now there's a move towards integration, taking a system level view, where you try to model the whole system. Okay, so in principle, if your model for all the individual components are very good, you should be able to model the whole system, but we can't model the whole system. Okay, so it really doesn't work out, and especially I think science has been very effective in physics, and to a large extent chemistry fundamentally is like physics, you know. But as you go, if you look at it from a philosophical perspective, you have Annamaya Kosha, Pranamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha, right? Physics is dealing with Annamaya Kosha, right? And when you deal with inanimate objects, I think science is doing a pretty good job. When you deal with Pranamaya Kosha, let's look at it as biology, right? Then you have a little bit more problems. When you look at mind sciences or psychology, you have even more problems. One fundamental belief in science is that of reproducibility. Forget about correctness. Correctness is necessary also, but if you don't have reproducibility, then everything else you have in science is meaningless, right? So you should, even if you're wrong, at least you should be able to reproduce the wrong stuff, right? So they tried to do some research and try to reproduce psychology results, and 2/3 of the results could not be reproduced. Okay, forget about correctness. You can't even reproduce your results, right? So all you explained about it, if it's not reproducible, you explained imaginary stuff. Right? So then they said, okay, let's try this with other fields also, and similar in medicine, in biology, in economics. Right, in artificial intelligence, they say found the same problem of reproducibility. A lot of stuff cannot be reproduced, you know. So we are actually having very fundamental problems in science, and some of these have been published in top journals like Nature, Science, and all that. And the belief that science can explain the universe, I think, is very far-fetched. I think physics can explain the material universe pretty well, but I think when you get to life or the psychological aspects, I think the science's scientific method is not really strong enough, and I think it's very far-fetched to claim that science is explaining everything, so there's no role for the spiritual dimension.
Wow.